Okay, y'all, today's episode is one of my favorites ever because it relates to so many of us. I'm so grateful for my friend Jessica Procini and all of the research and experience she has had with emotional eating and how willing she is to share and support people through their own journeys with emotional eating. So in this episode, Jess is going to talk about what emotional eating is and how to recognize it in your own life. And she gives a ton of tools for managing emotional eating. And I would highly recommend that you listen to this episode with a pen. Now, I think that so many of my guests drop value bombs during episodes and that listening with a pen is useful. But in this particular episode, Jessica gives some tools as well as a blessing that I know you're going to want to write down. So if there is ever an episode to listen with a pen and listen with your undivided attention, it would be this one. So without further ado, grab your pen and your notepad and settle in for my interview with Jessica Procini.
Hello, and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm so excited about our guest today. Her name is Jessica Procini, and she is an expert and a healer on emotional eating, which is something that I think affects so many of us. So I am so excited to hear what she has to say today. Hi, Jessica. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. Can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, so we already covered that my name is Jessica. I tend to look a lot younger than I actually am. I live in Center City, Philadelphia, in a small neighborhood called Fishtown. So if there are any foodies out there, this is the neighborhood to come and go out to dinner because there's a ton of great restaurants. I've pretty much lived in the Philadelphia area my entire life, but I grew up in South Jersey. When I'm not working and helping other people heal their emotional eating, I'm either taking an adult ballet class, baking. I love to bake, but I do not like to cook. Or I'm on the beach. I am married to a wonderful man named Zach, and we don't have any kids, but I do have a fur baby. His name is CJ. He's 6 years old. He's a little dog that I rescued. He's very shy, but if you follow me on Instagram, you'll probably see me taking pictures of him because he's very photogenic and I think he's really cute. And I think other dog people out there would agree.
Well, that is awesome. He is a very cute dog. So you're an emotional eating healer and your company is called Escape from Emotional Eating. Can you talk to us about what you do as a healer and how your company was formed?
Yeah. So from as far as I can remember, I was always an emotional eater. My earliest memory of emotional eating was from when I was 6 years old. And whenever life got difficult or challenging or like I felt uncomfortable, I would always reach for food. And I didn't really think it was that big of a deal, especially like growing up. And it didn't really start to become a real big issue until I reached adulthood, like in my mid-20s, where I really felt like my relationship with food was holding me back. I was always thinking about food. Food was very much a safety blanket. And the more responsibilities and stress I experienced in my life, the more I would lean on food to soothe and comfort and escape. And it wasn't until I was really doing it pretty often that I really started to feel like there was something really wrong with me. Like I said, I was always thinking about food. Food was very much like a secret of mine. Like on the outside, everyone would think, oh, like Jessica has it all together. But on the inside, it was a very different story. I would hear these voices in my head when I would go to like eat something, and like one voice would say, oh yeah, like let's have that. And then the other voice would be like, no, no, you know, you shouldn't eat that. And it was like always this battle in my mind when it came to food. And I really started to feel insane. Like I started to feel very tortured in my relationship with food, very, very self-conscious. Like there were times where all I wanted to do was just crawl out of my own skin. Like the thought of just being with myself, like made my skin crawl. And I remember trying to talk to my friends about it at the time, like what was going on between me and food. But they were sort of like, oh, Jessica, everyone does that. And we would like sign up for a workout class and try and work it off. I remember trying to talk to my partner at the time, and he was like, oh, Jessica, you know, I'll love you no matter what size you are, which is everything that we want our partners to say. But what really boggled my mind was, how could he love me when all I wanted to do was crawl out of my own skin? And I remember trying to see like therapist after therapist, and they just wanted to write me a prescription for antidepressants and like send me on my way. I was already very clear that I was using food as a way to numb myself. I didn't want to just replace food with medication and continue to live this numb, unconscious life. And Overeaters Anonymous never resonated with me. I come from a long history, many generations of alcoholism. So trying to go to a 12-step program just was like so triggering. I couldn't do it. It was in that point that I just really felt very alone and hopeless, and like there was something like very deeply wrong with me. And it was at that dark time where I just really felt like a shell of a human being. I just felt like this is like my cross to bear. This is just something I'm gonna have to deal with for the rest of my life. But there was this inner knowing that things could be different. There was this inner knowing that like, no, there has to be a better way. And that was when I really dedicated myself to investigating every single nook and cranny of my relationship with food, the physical, the mental, the emotional, the spiritual. And I found answers that no one was talking about. Like after all the health coaches and nutritionists and people and therapists I'd seen, I was like, why didn't anyone tell me this? Because these were the things that really changed my life. And the first one was that I was an emotional eater. I didn't have hundreds of pounds to lose, but I, yes, very much was emotionally eating, and that I was using food to push away my stress, anxiety, and uncomfortable feelings. And that if I wanted to really heal this, I had to get to the roots of it and root it out from where it started. So I did just that. And now it's been over almost 4 years since I have emotionally eaten or overeaten in any capacity. I have a very peaceful, nourishing relationship with food. It is very much a nourishing asset. I no longer use it to numb. I don't use it to escape. I don't need to escape with food anymore. And, you know, I still love food. Like I'm an Italian, so food is very much a part of my life, but the way that I love it is very different. It's not something I have to have. Like it doesn't have a lot of like compulsive charge behind it anymore. It's just like I eat when I'm hungry and I stop when I'm full, which is like crazy because I was always jealous of those people who could say that. And now I am one of those people. But really that is where Escape from Emotional Eating really got birthed and continues to evolve is directly from my experience and the decade of research that I pulled to create the tools and the processes and the teachings that I now teach all of my clients in my different programs and retreats.
That's awesome. So talk to us a little bit about what exactly emotional eating is in relation to other types of eating disorders that we see.
So the way I define emotional eating is using food for a purpose other than fuel. So using food for a purpose other than physical nourishment. Now, when I say that, people usually like throw their arms up and they're like, what do you mean? Like food should be pleasurable. Food should be joyful. And I'm saying yes, 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 is yes, it should. But the primary intention of food is to physically nourish. Now, healing emotional eating does not mean that we never have a cookie or a cake or, you know, food that we love. Like it doesn't mean that we eat cardboard for the rest of our lives. But it's the way that we use it and why are we eating is what really puts it into, is this emotional eating or not? It's all about why are you eating? So an example is, you know, you had a really long, stressful day at work and you come home and you go right to the pantry and you open up a bag of chips, even if they're healthy chips, and you just, you know, eat and until either the bag is empty or you're like, what the heck am I doing? Another example, like for me, I used to have this thing with granola and it was like healthy granola, which like boggles my mind because we can overeat and emotionally eat healthy food too. But I used to have this thing with granola where I could go through a bag of granola in a matter of minutes, just like unconsciously eating. Now, how does it compare to other eating disorders? So I am not an expert on eating disorders. I'm an expert on emotional eating. So I can't specifically speak to the other disorders out there. But what I will say is that emotional eating is a learned behavior. And oftentimes for us emotional eaters, we learn it at a very young age. Like I said, for me, I started it at 6 years old, just not knowing what I was doing. I was just using it to cope at the time. But emotional eating is a learned behavior that needs to be unlearned. Where this differs from other eating disorders is it's not an addiction. It's not an eating disorder. It is a learned behavior of the way that we use food to cope, to soothe, escape uncomfortable feelings and situations that we don't want to be in.
So talk about for a second, because most of us have a lot of emotions tied to food. For example, I think of different holidays and traditions and things like that in my family, and I associate them with food. So how is that different from eating emotionally to where it's a detriment to us?
Yeah. So the key word in that is the detriment, right? And the self-destruction that comes from emotional eating. So emotional eating can show up at family gatherings, and usually family gatherings can be very triggering for emotional eaters because it's just a tangled web of like food and family. But the key thing about like emotional eating as the detriment is that there is something that we are looking to avoid. There is a situation, an experience, and usually that situation and experience is one that requires us to be vulnerable, one that requires us to be intimate. Intimate could be with just our own thoughts and feelings and our own personal truth, or intimate and vulnerable with someone else, like our husbands or kids' teacher or something along those lines. And then like there's the other category, like you're talking about of like emotional associations with food is what you're referring to when it comes to like holidays and things like that. Like, of course, we're going to feel emotions during those times because we are emotional beings. But again, it comes back to why are we eating? You know, are we eating just because grandma serves her cheesecake on every Christmas and you actually don't really like cheesecake, but you're just eating it because you don't want her feelings to be hurt? That actually is an act of emotional eating because it is self-sacrifice in that. But if you're like, oh, you know, it's the holidays and it's fun and I'm enjoying myself and, you know, I just happen to be eating at the same time, that's not really emotional eating, because the key is if, like, what you're doing to yourself in the process is detrimental and destructive, even if it's happening a little bit.
Gotcha. So do you find that emotional eating mostly affects women, or do you see it in men and children as well?
So emotional eating basically, like, has no barriers when it comes to who it affects, how old they are, race, gender, even geographical location, because I work with international clients as well. And people who live in Iceland, the Netherlands, Europe, it's all the same. The roots of emotional eating are the same, whether you are male, female, or whatever you identify with, no matter what age you are, no matter what your socioeconomic statuses, no matter what your education is, the roots of emotional eating are the same, and it can impact anyone.
So it seems to me, like, from what you're describing, that this is something that probably generally starts in childhood. How can we recognize if our children are starting to develop this habit or this emotional eating? Is there something we can be looking for, and then maybe some way that we can talk them through it or teach them about it so that it doesn't become kind of a full-blown problem for them throughout their lives?
Yeah. So when it comes to children, like as I was sharing before, emotional eating is a learned behavior. And where I learned the behavior was from my family, from my most intimate relationships, which is my family of origin. So when it comes to children, and if you see your child, like, really having, maybe they're hoarding food or secretly eating, or it's sort of like you just sort of know that something's not right with your kid and food, I always encourage the parents to first look at their relationship with food. And are you actually an emotional eater and your kid is just modeling it after you? Because I definitely have clients where they'll share, like, their kids will be like, oh, I'm stress eating, you know, and they're 8 years old and they probably don't even really know what that means, but they're just doing it because they saw their parents do it. So I always say that, you know, as parents, it is our adult responsibility to really heal ourselves first, so then we can teach our children what we needed to know and learn. And that's something I'm really passionate about and really grateful for, that I have healed my emotional eating, because I know I will not pass this on to my children. Like, this stops here with me. It's done. We do not do this. This is not the way that we deal with difficult experiences. So for, like I was saying, for adults, it's really about, you know, what's going on in your relationship with food. Is food a nourishing asset for you, or are you using it to cope, soothe, and escape? And I do have a quiz on my website, escapefromemotionaleating.com, that if anyone who's listening is like, I wonder if I'm emotionally eating, or I wonder, you know, does this apply to me? You can take the quiz on my website, escapefromemotionaleating.com, and it'll give you your results, and then it'll tell you what to do next. And a lot of people tell me how eye-opening that is, because I think a lot of people have this stereotype when it comes to emotional eating, and they think it's like you have to have hundreds of pounds to lose and you have to, like, qualify by eating like 10 bags of potato chips. And it doesn't show up that way. That's a very extreme example that usually is on TV and is not how it always shows up for all of us. So if you sense that your child is emotionally eating, I want to invite you to take the quiz. And then if you don't have children, or you just sense you might be emotionally eating, take the quiz anyway. And let's, you know, really see what's going on in your relationship with food, for anyone who's listening.
Yeah. So for anyone who's listening that takes the quiz and finds out that they're struggling, or if you're just sitting here going, I think I'm probably an emotional eater, will exercising, eating healthier, or going to therapy heal your relationship with food? Like, is that the next step? Why or why not?
No. And I speak directly from my own experience about this. So I saw so many health coaches and nutritionists, and they really just scratch the surface. And there's so much more to emotional eating. So things like diets and meal plans and portion control and counting and measuring, those are surface approaches. Exercising is also a way that really misses the mark. It misses the roots of our emotional eating. And I can tell you, I was working out twice a day, burning 1,400 calories a day, which is insane, by the way. And I was still gaining weight because I was still an emotional eater. And then as far as therapy, I spent over 932 hours on the therapy couch, and it never, never touched my relationship with food. I love therapy. I think it's really great. I think, you know, having a therapist is such a great resource, but I would sit on the couch. They had my favorite tea, so I was like all in for that. And I would like vent my feelings, but then I would go home and I would feel compulsive again. And the pantry would be calling my name and I would be right back in the same old patterns. And I did that for years. And that was when I was like, there just has to be more. There just has to be more to what is going on. There has to be something deeper. And that was when I got clear. I was like, all right, as emotional eaters, we have to do this differently. This conventional stuff of just eat healthier, exercise more, and go to therapy doesn't work for us. It doesn't. It just misses the mark.
Okay. So if you listen to me in any capacity, you know that I love to talk about marriage. And as I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm wondering if you can speak about how emotional eating could affect maybe our closest relationships, like our marriages.
Yes. So I love connecting the two because a lot of people don't really see the obvious connection. But the way that emotional eating shows up and impacts our marriages is that emotional eating is an exit strategy. It is the way that we will avoid being vulnerable, avoid intimacy. So not only is it a way that will, if there's like an opportunity to be intimate or vulnerable, we'll go eat, but we'll also not be intimate and vulnerable because we overate. So it's like a little bit of a cycle in where we don't want to be intimate and vulnerable because we don't feel good enough, right? Because or our belly's full, we feel sick, gross. And we'll also use it as like a way of like, this feels really uncomfortable. Like I'm just going to have something to eat. And I know for myself, there have been times in my relationships where, you know, I would really use food as a way to just shove down how I really felt. Like instead of having a difficult conversation or having, you know, certain emotions, I would just push them down and put food on top of them and pretend like everything was fine, which is a disaster for being in a marriage because what you resist persists. So whatever you shove down is going to come up in some way, shape, or form. And it'll usually come up as a full-on explosion and a big knockdown, drag-out fight where your partner's like, what just happened? Because meanwhile, you've been like boiling, right? You've just been containing all of your energy and emotions. So emotional eating is like the ultimate killer for intimacy and vulnerability. And we need intimacy and vulnerability in our marriages. Like that's really what it's built on, is being safe in that intimate and vulnerable space. And food is just a major way that it can tear that apart. And it can even really end marriages, unfortunately.
Yeah, you've really said some really interesting and important things, I think, for us to really consider. So are there some tools that listeners can get started with today to help start healing their emotional eating?
Yeah, so I always like to leave people with something to take away and apply right away. So in my programs and retreats, I teach how to untangle physical and emotional hunger. And one of the tools that we use as this foundational piece is called the fullness scale. And the fullness scale is really meant to support you in getting back in touch with your body's language, to really understand when you're satiated, and to start strengthening muscles so that when you're satiated, you can honor it instead of blowing through it and overeating. So for those listening, you want to picture a scale of 1 to 10. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, all the way up to 10. A 10 on the fullness scale is Thanksgiving Day stuffed. That is where you feel sick and gross and you have to unbutton your pants and you're like, what did I do? I'm not going to eat again for another 2 weeks. Like, oh my gosh, this is disgusting. So that's a 10. Where we want to practice aiming and starting to feel comfortable with is landing at a 7. And the 7 is what I call eating for integrity. This is where you are physically satiated, so you're satisfied, you're full, you're not starving, but you can also move on with your life and you're not thinking about food, you're not worried that you didn't eat enough or feeling like you're gonna have to eat again in another hour. Eating for integrity is where you're really honoring yourself. You're really honoring your physical body's needs, but without the stress, the anxiety, or your emotions getting involved. So that is something everyone can practice today or the next time that they eat, really thinking of that fullness scale. Okay, 10 is that Thanksgiving Day stuff. So where am I on the fullness scale as I'm eating? And let me start to practice aiming for that 7. And let me just see what it feels like in my body, because it's a very different sensation than always overeating, which is a very familiar sensation for us emotional eaters.
So in your programs, you teach us how to kind of untangle that all of the emotions from the physical activity of eating. Do you also talk about making healthier food choices, or does that just kind of take care of itself once we've taken those emotions away from it?
Yeah, so I don't teach about like what food choices you should be making, because the people that I tend to work with are people who know what they should be eating. They're just not doing it. So they've got that covered. But the way that I talk about food choices is that you want to choose what's nourishing for you and not what poisoning for you. So like something that leaves you bloated and sitting on the toilet for hours, that's not nourishing. So that's sort of like the extent of what I teach as far as food choices, because what it's really about is like, why do you know what you should eat and you're not doing it? And what are the stories that you're telling yourself? What are the expectations and the fears that you have about following through on that? And basically like what's getting in your way? And very much through the process of healing emotional eating, you learn a real high level of self-respect and self-love and self-trust, that it's almost like your inner voice, your intuition, I guess you could call it, will scream at you if you try to like deviate. Like it gets to the point where your intuition will really scream at you if you're even thinking of going through a drive-through or something like that when you know you shouldn't. So yeah, it does take care of itself through that process of healing and self-respect and self-love and self-trust.
Gotcha. I know you're excited about this question. If you had the undivided attention of everyone in the entire world that eats for just 5 minutes, what is the most important thing you could teach them to help them have a healthy relationship with eating and food?
Yes, I love this question because it immediately made me think of my retreats called The Escape, where we all eat together silently. And I know not everyone has that luxury, which is why we do it together on the retreats for multiple days, because it absolutely shifts everyone's relationship with food instantly. But another tradition that we have on my retreats is reciting the Escape from Emotional Eating blessing before we eat. And I wanted to share it with everyone who's listening so you can play it back. And the next time that you eat, you can say the blessing with me, or you can write it down and you can use it, because it'll absolutely shift your energy around food. It's like you can't go unconscious after you say this. So it goes like this. I bless this food and allow it to nourish me. I eat in peace, trusting my body already knows what to do. I give thanks and affirm I am healthy, happy, and free. And then you begin eating, but saying this blessing in the beginning absolutely shifts the intention of the meal. It dismantles a lot of limiting beliefs that we as emotional eaters have, like we can't trust our body. So immediately you're saying, like, I eat in peace and I trust my body already knows what to do. And it just really just brings a sense of like safety and comfort to a meal experience where a lot of times for emotional eaters, eating can be very full of anxiety and fear. So I hope that's helpful. I really recommend people go back and play it again and say it with me before they eat because it'll absolutely shift their relationship with food and their meal experience.
Well, I love that. Jessica, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time you've taken to chat with us today, along with the years of research and just learning about such an important topic that I think affects all of us. We all eat. So that was the joke when I said, if you had to talk to all the people that eat, that's all of us.
Everyone.
And I'm sure that most of us go through periods of time where we're eating more emotionally than others. We're feeling more anxiety about eating than other times. And so I'm sure in some respect or another, it affects every single one of us. So I really appreciate that. I'm excited. I will let everyone know when they listen to make sure they have a pen to write down the blessing because I think that is really pivotal. And for those of us who have more questions and recognize that we are emotional eaters, where can my listeners find you and learn more about emotional eating and untangling that giant web around it?
Yes. So go to escapefromemotionaleating.com, put your name and email in the boxes, you'll see it on the homepage, and let's stay connected. Like I said, there's a quiz on there that I highly recommend that everyone takes, even if they already know they're an emotional eater, take it anyway, because you'll probably learn something new. And let's stay connected. I also send out like videos and newsletters and inspiration. So if they sign up on the website, they'll receive all of that. But healing emotional eating is a journey. And I gave a lot of great tips and things today that can get people started, but there really is so much more. So if anything that I said resonates with anyone who's listening, come on over, escapefromemotionaleating.com. Let's stay connected and I'd be honored to hold their hand and your hand every step of the way in healing your relationship with food because how we do one thing is how we do everything. So how we eat, it's how we live, it's how we interact, it's how we are intimate, particularly within our marriage and our family, and it just really is everything. So escapefromemotionaleating.com.
Thank you so much.
Okay, I hope you listened to that episode with a pen, and don't say I didn't warn you. What I love so much about this episode is that it's relatable to so many of us. I don't think there's anyone out there who has not experienced some level of emotional eating. Now, if you can relate to the beginning of Jessica's story about the way that she felt when she felt completely out of control and first learned that she was an emotional eater, then I would definitely, definitely reach out to her and connect with her on escapefromemotionaleating.com. But if you're like me and you realize that there are times, very specific times in your life when you've experienced emotional eating. Like for me, what comes first to mind is when I went away to college for the first time or when I was first married and trying to figure out how to be a wife and work and support my husband through school. Those times definitely stand out to me as times when I was eating emotionally. But there's other circumstances where I feel like holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas, where I tend to err on the side of overeating, perhaps emotionally. I feel like Jessica gave some incredible tools in this episode for times like those. Like like the fullness scale or the eating blessing that she gave. I thought those were super helpful for times when it's hard to eat from a neutral space. Now, lucky for us, Jessica is one of the presenters in the Epic Health Summit, which actually starts tomorrow. So if you want to hear more from her, it's worth registering for the summit. She presents on the second day and she talks more in depth about emotional eating and gives even more tools for combating that through her 30-day action plan, which is almost a step-by-step 30-day plan for working through some of that emotionally eating tendencies. So definitely register if you've been on the fence and you want to hear more from Jessica. Go to www.onthebrightersideofhealth.com and get registered for the free summit that is going on this week starting tomorrow. You're going to love all the topics that we cover under physical, emotional, and mental health. We've got some incredible experts, including Jessica Procini, who are going to present on those topics. And I've got another great guest next week. Her name is Alicia Carlson, and she is also a presenter in the Epic Marriage Summit. So enjoy the summit this week, and until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.